All right, so we're holding on Lamed Gimel Amud Beis by the Mishnah near the bottom. And we've gone through the criteria for a lulav, for a hadas, now we're up to the arav. So the Mishnah says that, like with the other ones, arav gzulav yivesha psula, an arav that was stolen or that was posel, that was stolen or that was dry, is posel. Lulav and hadas, by the way, are loshen zachar, therefore the expression was gozul and yavish. Arava is loshen makeva, therefore it's gzulav yivesha. Rashi points out, by the way, which we mentioned yesterday, so why didn't the Mishnah just give, if you have the same psulim by a lot of them, why didn't you just combine them together and say that any of the minim, that a gozul, the yavish, is posel, and the same thing with a number of the other ones. And in fact, when the Rambam puts it, which is the current Shlosha Prakim, he does just that. So the answer is Rashi says because each one of them has unique psulim that apply only to that min, and therefore because of that, the Mishnah listed them separately. Anyway, shall Asherah shall air any dachas psula, also an arava that comes from an Asherah, which we said the other day, we're talking about the kind of Asherah where you can't be mevatel, it has to be burnt, and we talked about a few different possibilities that Tosfos brought, what exactly was the scenario with this Asherah. Anyway, the point is it had to be burnt, so therefore it's possible, and the same thing if it comes from an air any dachas, it's possible because again, the same idea, since it has to be burnt, then we consider now as if it's already burnt, and therefore it doesn't have the shear. So therefore psula. Nikdam roisha, top of it was chopped off, nifritzu aleha, or if the leaves of it were torn off, and again we discussed by the lulav, what does that mean? Does it mean completely torn off? Does it mean torn off to the point where they're hanging downward, they're not facing upward toward the tip of it like they normally would, etc. Or vatsatzfa, or a tsatzfa, which we're going to see in the Gemara, is a species related to the arava, but a different kind. All of those psula, all of those are possible to use. On the other hand, musha, if the arava is only wilted, so it's not completely dry, to the extent that we talked about in the last few days, what dry means, according to different rishonim, if it's not that point, if it's only wilted, v'shenoshu miktas aleha, or if only some of the leaves fell off it, v'shel baal, or if it came from a tree that was from a field that needs rainwater, that's not by a stream. The point is because the pasuk calls it arve nochal, which on the face of it means willows of the brook, of the stream, so it sounds like they have to grow by a stream. But we're going to see in the Gemara, not necessarily the species is kosher, even if the particular instance, if it doesn't grow by a stream. So therefore, so even if it's shel baal, even if it's from a field that has to be watered by rain, ksheira, then it's still kosher. The one about kmusha, the one about it being wilted, applies to all the minim. The pashtus, the reason the Mishnah mentions it specifically by the arava, is because as we all know, every year during Sukkot, the arava is the one that dries out the fastest, and therefore it's the one more than all the other ones that you're going to end up with a wilted one. But the same principle applies to the other ones. Okay, so the Gemara says Tanarabanan, we learn in a braisa. Now, unlike the other minim, really, when it comes to the other minim, the Torah really, as we've said before, just gives adjectives for them, and we know the Kabbalah ish mipiish back to Moshe Rabbeinu what they mean. But really, what we need is really, but each time we also try to show how the pasuk itself indicates that in the words that it uses. Arava is actually it does say arve nochal, so it's clear what the species is. But what is the word arve nochal mean? So Tanan Abanan. Arve nochal, hagdelin al hanachal. It means willows that grow by a stream. So Rashi explains, in other words, that even though the Mishnah had said that ones that grow elsewhere are kosher, the ideal thing is to use one that grows by a stream. You can't find, then you can take from something else. Although actually Kapus Tamarim wants to say that in the end the Gemara doesn't continue with that, but that's only according to the Havam in it. Okay, Davra Acha, another explanation, Arve Nochal, Sha'ola Shalom Moshuch Kanochal. It's a species where the leaves of it are long like a stream. So the leaves of an arava are long and skinny, and in that sense resemble a stream, as opposed to the Gemara is going to say soon, the Tzatzafa, this other species that we mentioned in the Mishnah, that's parcel, that one has rounded leaves. Okay, the Gemara says, Tanya Yidach, then we learn in another Braisa, Arve Nochal, Eimli Ela Arve Nochal, if you only had those words, Arve nochal, you would only know that it's dafka kosher only if it grows by a stream. Shall baal shall harim minayin. How would we know that it's kosher even if it grows in a field that's watered by rain or an irrigated field for that matter, or in the mountains. How do we know that those are kosher? Tamadana arve nachal mikol makim. Therefore, the pasuk says arve in the plural. Otherwise, it could have said arvats nachal. So arve implies any arve implies is a loshen rabim. So it implies any kind of arava nachal, as long as it's the species that you, as long as it's the species that usually grows by streams. Abba Shol says no. There's a different reason why it says arve in the plural. Arve shtayim achas lo lulav achas lo mikdash. He says the word arve implies that there's two kinds of arava that you take. One for the lulav, one is one of the dalabinim, and the other one in the bis mikdash. We're going to talk about in the next parak about how in the bis mikdash they actually did two things with the aravas. They took tall aravas and stood them up all around the mizbeach, and then there was also they marched around the mizbeach. So the marching around the Mizbeach, we're going to discuss in the next parak whether in fact they did that with the Aravos, or whether they did that maybe holding lulav or palm branches of some kind. But to what they stood up by the side of the Mizbeach is definitely Aravos. So Abba Shaul says the fact that the word Arve in the Pasuk means that you need both of those, one for the lulav and one for that mitzvah in the Bais Mikdash. Tosfos actually asks in that case, and how do we know it's specifically in the Bais Mikdash? An answer could be because after all, the pasuk does say "Snachtem lifnei Hashem lekechem shivas yomim," and later on, in the next parak, we're going to talk about how that. Later in our parak, we're going to talk about how this tells us that midaraisa you only have to take the lulav for 7 days only in the Bais Mikdash. So if we're learning from Arve Nochal that you have to have a second purpose for the arava, then Abba Shaul is going to say that's only in the Bais Mikdash. So the question is, v'rabbanan l'mikdash minalahu, so where do the Chachamim know about that second one from the Bais Mikdash? And Tosfos says, actually, the implication is that maybe a fact, according to Abba Shaul, if he's using the word arve to teach us about the second one in the Bais Mikdash, maybe indeed according to him, this that we just said, that you'd be able to use an arava that grows someplace else, maybe not. Maybe according to him, in fact, you couldn't. Because according to the Chachamim, you're using the word arve to teach us that any kind of arava is kosher. But Abba Shaul, who's using it to teach us something else, he might tack a hold that only an arava that grows by a stream is kosher and no other kind. Anyway, so the question is, where do the Chachamim know about the arava that's used in the Bais Mikdash? The answer is Hilch Segmir Bahu. The answer is they say to Halacha L'Moshe B'Sinai, and Halacha L'Moshe B'Sinai doesn't have to have a source in a pasuk. In fact, a classic Halacha L'Moshe B'Sinai has no source in a pasuk at all. The Amr of Asi, Amr of Yechanan, Esther Netiyos, the din about 10 young trees, which I'll explain in a second what that is, Arava, about the Arava that was used in the Bais Mikdash, the Nisuch HaMayim, and the pouring of the water on the Mizbeach during Sukkot, all of those, Halacha L'Moshe B'Sinai, so therefore, according to the Chacham, Halacha L'Moshe B'Sinai, so therefore they don't need the word Arve to teach us that. What is Esen Tiyos? So Rashi brings like this. We know you're not allowed to work the ground during Shemitah, of course. You also have a din that during the year before Shnitta, there's a certain period of time before Shnitta, 30 days before Shnitta, and even longer for some purposes, that you're not allowed to do certain agricultural work during the year before Shnitta. The Gemara discusses in a few places whether how much of that is Daraisa, how much of that is Dirabanan. Anyway, to a certain degree, it's Daraisa. And the idea of it is because anything that you're doing that late in the year is necessarily going to be in order to prepare the field for next year. And next year is you're being done to prepare the field for next year. And next year is Shemitah. And therefore you can't do that. Now, so one of those things that you're not allowed to do, during the 30 days before Rosh Hashanah of Shemitah is plowing the field. Because again, why would you be plowing the field that late in the year? You're preparing it for planting the next year, and you can't do that. Morning, Ali. Rolling on Lama Dabba and Rodala for about five lines from the top. So like this, though. On the other hand, one type of field that you might have to plow, like this, you have to plow a field where you're planting grain or anything like that. But sometimes you also have plowing is necessary not only in order to plant, but also where you already have plants there and you're plowing the ground in order to soften up the ground in order that more air will get to the roots of the plants. So you have like this. If you have a field with trees in it, in particular, you have young trees, and tias means young trees, and you have a base saw, which is an area 50 by 50 amas, and you have 10 young trees in there, then the Chachamim figured out, then the Halacha L'Moshe Mitzrayim tells us then that the trees need that entire base saw for their nourishment. And since they're young trees, they need a lot of air for their roots. Therefore, the Halacha is you're allowed to continue plowing around the roots of those trees, that entire base saw, all the way until Rosh Hashanah of Shemitah. So unlike usually, you have to stop the plowing and most of your other agricultural work 30 days before Shemitah, here you're allowed to do it right up until Rosh Hashanah. So that's one of these halachos L'Moshe L'Sinai that you're allowed to do that. You have less than 10 trees, or if they're not scattered all around the base saw, then you can only plow around each tree individually, not the entire base saw, not the entire 50 by 50 yams. So those three things, why are those three things listed together? Rashi explains that when Rabbi Yochanan was asked the question, where do we know these dinim from? The Talmud who asked all three of them at the same time. And the answer to all three was Halacha L'Moshe Mitzrayim, and therefore the Talmud learned them together, and therefore that became the thing that Rabbi Asi tells us in the name of Rabbi Yochanan. So the point is, according to that, then this concept of arava, that you take aravas in the Bais Mikdash and stand them around the mizbeach, and according to some opinions, you march around the mizbeach with them and then beat them on the ground. Actually, the beating on the ground we're going to say in the next parak is a dakana of the Nevi'im. But the other parts of it, we're saying, according to the Chachamim, is halacha L'Moshe B'Sinai. Therefore, according to them, that's what we're learning from the, so we're not learning that from the word arve. According to them, the word arve means that you need, that any kind of arava is kosher, even if it doesn't grow by the stream. Okay. Now, we talked about in the Mishnah, one of the things we said was possible is a tzatzifa, which a tzatzifa is a species related to arava, but not similar enough to it. It's a ton of abonim. Arve nochal agdelus al nachal. The word arve nochal refers to ones that grow by the stream, which, okay, we said it doesn't mean dafka, the individual one has to grow by the stream, but it's a species that grows by streams. Prapat tzatzifa agdela ben ahorim. Therefore, it excludes the tzatzifa, which is a species that normally grows on the mountains. Amr Rav Zeira Maikra. So Rav Zeira says, what's a pasuk that expresses this idea that a tzatzifa is like an inferior kind of arava? Because after all, you could argue, nowadays, fine, you'd look at the scientific name of it, and you'd determine what the name of it is. But, as far as halacha is concerned, we don't look at scientific names. We look at what's related closely enough, what's similar closely enough to be considered the same species. So why should a tzatzifa, which is somewhat similar to an arava, as we're going to discuss soon, why shouldn't it be considered a subspecies of arava, and it should be kosher? So, because the pasuk describes in Yechezkel, then Yechezkel is giving a mashal over there about how the Jewish people are like a plant that's being fought over between two big eagles. The eagles representing the one eagle representing the Nebuchadnezzar, the other one representing Parei Melech Mitzrayim, and the Jewish people should be loyal to Nebuchadnezzar. This is in the years before the Churban, and instead they're figuring out how to rebel against him, and eventually they're going to be uprooted, and there's going to be a galus for it. This is Yechezkel gives a whole mashal over there. So he has an expression in the pasuk Koch Al Mayim Rabin, was supposed to be a planting by many waters, tzatzafa samai, but instead he made him a tzatzafa. So in other words, as the Gemara is going to go on to explain, that the Hashem intended that the Jewish people should be in a very good state, like a koch amayim rabim, like a plant that grows by many waters, and instead they made themselves into a tzatzafa. So Amalei Abaye B'Jumah Parushi Kamefarish. Maybe the word Safsafa in the Pasuk is an explanation of the previous thing. Koch HaMayim Rabim Humayim Nihut Safsafa. Maybe the Pasuk is telling us that Hashem made them like a planting that grows by many waters, namely a Safsafa. The answer is, okay, my Samai. Then what is the word Samai? He made it doing in the Pasuk. So therefore, we have to understand that it means that Hashem intended that it should be a Koch HaMayim Rabim, a plant that grows by many waters, and Arava, which grows successfully by many waters, and instead the Jewish people made themselves into an inferior tzatzifa. The Chassam Sofer, in fact, says on it, the Remez on it, that tzatzifa is Moloshin tzatzif, like a person twitters and makes noises. So, in other words, Hashem intended, after all, the Arava we know among the Dalabinim, the Arava represents the Jews who have very little knowledge of Torah and very little mitzvahs. Still, Hashem wanted that even they should be a Malay mitzvahs kareiman, but instead of being that, instead of at least being full of mitzvahs and maybe exporting the Tumat HaChamim, instead, they made themselves into a tzatzifa where they're just twittering at and making fun of the Tumat HaChamim and the people who are keeping mitzvahs. So Omer Rabbahu says that's what the pasuk is saying. Omer HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Ani Yomarti Shiyu Yisrael L'fameh Koch HaMayim Rabim. I intended that the Jewish people should be before me like a koch, like a plant that was planted by many waters. Umay Niyu Arava. Namely, that I wanted that the Jewish people should be an Arava, which is a better kind of species, and it's kosher for the Dalabinim. V'hein, somewhat from the Tzatzifa Shabaharim. Instead, the Jewish people chose to make themselves like the inferior plant, the Tzatzifa, which grows in the mountains. So like they cut themselves off from their own source of nourishment. The Gemara says, "Ika demasni v'alahokra amasnisa." Then there are those instead of learning this in connection with a braisa. On the word arve nochal, and we explain that we exclude a tzatzifa, and from there we explain the pasuk. There are those instead who learn that this pasuk was mentioned in a braisa, where the braisa itself gives the proof from the words koch hamayim ram tzatzifa sanai, and mask for abzera, and abzera asks on the tana of the braisa, How does the Tana of the Brisa know that Tzatzifa is meant to be a different species than Arava? The Duma Porushi Kamafarish Kochamayim Ramim Mayim Yu Tzatzifa. And again, the answer is, okay, my Samoy, in that case, then what would the word Samoy mean? The word Samoy, he placed it, is referring to what the Jewish people placed and made themselves into something that Hashem didn't intend for them to be. And on that, Omer Rav Abahu, I intended the Jewish people should be before me like a plant that grows by many waters, or my new Arava, namely the better quality plant, the Arava, which is kosher for the Dalad Minim, and instead they chose to make themselves like the inferior Tzatzifa. Okay, so the point is, either way, either the Braisa just mentioned the concept that Tzatzifa is possible, and Reb Zera brought the possible, Or then Abaya asked on him, or the second version is Braisa itself gave the pasuk, and Reb Zera asked on the according to the second version, the Braisa brought the pasuk, and Reb Zera asked on it, and the anonymous the sum of the Gemara answers on Reb Zera instead of in the first version Abaya answered. Same thing. Now. Okay. Ezehu Arava ve'ezehu Tzatzifa. What is the actual definition of Arava versus Tzatzifa? Arava koneshala odrim. So, an arava has a red stem, but olashala moshuch. The leaves of it are long and skinny, like we said before, they resemble a stream. Opia cholok, and the edges of the leaves are smooth. On the other hand, tzatzifa koneshala lavan. A tzatzifa has a white stem, but olashala ogul. The leaves of it are rounder. They're not long and skinny, they're rounder. Opia dremel amagel, and the edges of the leaves resemble a saw. They're serrated. In fact, by the way, in Shulchan Aruch it mentions this that we're saying that the stem has to be red. Sometimes you buy a rubus and the stems aren't red yet. Sometimes the stems are still green. That's fine because they will become red when the branch matures. So the fact that it's still green now is okay. So the question is, what do you mean that if the edge of it is like a saw, then it's possible? Well, Tanya, we learn in a braisa, magol is not really a saw. To be exact, a magol is a sickle that you use for harvesting grain. So the Gemara says, "Vatani, we learn in a brisa, dremel a mago kosher, dremel a maso kosher. If it resembles a mago, a sickle, then it's kosher. But if it resembles a saw, then it's possible. So you see that it is kosher if it has serrations. So what are you telling me that one of the signs of a tzatzifa is that it has serrations? Amar Abaye, Tanya hi bechil for gila. The answer is Abaye says that brisa is talking about chil for gila, which is a subspecies of arava that has small serration, that has small serrations on the edges of it. But it still grows by the water. It still generally grows by the water. It still has long, skinny leaves. Rashi explains that the difference between like a sickle versus like a saw is the serrations of a sickle all face in one direction. In other words, if you were to run your finger along it, like you do with a shchita knife, if you run it along in one direction, you won't feel anything. If you run it in the other direction, then your fingernail will catch in it. As opposed to, like a saw, which we're saying a tzatzifa is, your finger will catch on the serrations in either direction. The Rambam learns it differently, that like a sickle means small serrations, and like a saw means large serrations. Lamaisa, you have, when you go buy a rubbish, sometimes before surface, sometimes the ones that you find in the stores have small serrations on them. So we're saying in our Gemara over here, those are fine. Those are also a subspecies of arava. So you have two different subspecies, one that has completely smooth edges, and then one that has small serrations. But if they have large serrations, then that's a tzatzifa, and then we're saying that that's possible because that's not the species that the Torah is referring to. Tosfos says, in fact, that's the reason why it has to mention the three of the arava, and then the contrast to the three of the tzatzifa is because, for example, you have, let's say, with this chil for gila, where it has two of the simonim of the arava, but it's lacking one because the edges of its leaves are not completely smooth, and therefore the braisa have to tell us the three signs of a tzatzifa, as if to say only if it has all or at least most of those would be possible, but not otherwise. Okay. So Amar Abaye, Shmamina, Hai Chil for Gila, Kosher Lo Yishayna. So Abaye says, you see from that Chil for Gila is kosher for the Dalad Minim. Again, Hashayna means the Dalad Minim, as we've had it a few times in our Masechta, in our Perek. So the Gemara says, Pshita, well, of course it's a subspecies of Arava. Why should it be possible? And the answer is, Ma'ud Tema Hoyova Isla Shem Mavai. Since it has a secondary name, it's not just called Arava, it's called Chil for Gila. Where the word chilfa is another name for arava, and gila is the subspecies of it. So therefore it should be possible. Kamash Malan, and therefore the Braisa wants us to know that, so therefore loinus kasher, you should think that maybe it's not kosher. Kamash Malan, therefore the Braisa wants to tell us that it's kosher. And the question is, Ve'ema Hochinami, maybe indeed a chil for gila should be kosher. Where is the Braisa saying this? Where does the Braisa know that in fact it's kosher? So the answer is, Arve Nochal, Amar Achbarim, Mikom Makom, because like we said before, the pasuk is Arve Nochal, in the plural, Arve, meaning any kind of arava. So as long as it fits the basic criteria of Arve Nochal, then we're good, even though in this case the leaves are not perfectly smooth, they're a little bit serrated. Or as Rashi says, the serrations all point in one direction. So in this connection, Amr of Chista, Hani Tlas Mili Ishtini Shmao Mikichor Bes Mikdash. Rav Chista says there were three things in the world whose names were changed after the Churban. In other words, before the Churban, these things are not changed, but flipped around. There's three pairs of things where before the Churban, certain things, you had one thing known by one name and a related thing by a different name, and then after the Churban, the names of them were flipped around. Number one, Chalafta Arvasa. Number one, what used to be called Chalafta, which is the Aramaic word for Tzatzifa, is now called Arvasa, which is the Aramaic word for Arava. And Aravda, and Arvasa, whatever, what used to be called an Arava, is Chalafta. So my Nafkamina, why do we need to know that? Lulav, as far as the dinim of Lulav. So before the Bes Mikdash was destroyed, you would have had to know to take what in Aramaic is called Arvasa, as one of your Dalad Minim. Now, after the Churban, you need to know that instead you need to look for what's now called Chalafta, or Chalfasa. Because it's the same species, but the name has changed. So look out for that. Number two, my Nachmina Lulav. Number two, Shippur HaTetzarta. Number two, what used to be called a shofar is now called HaTetzarta. Shippur, shofar, implies something that's curved. HaTetzarta means a trumpet, implies something that's straight. HaTetzarta Shippur, what used to be called HaTetzarta, is now called Shippur, the Aramaic word for shofar. My Naftamina. And why do we need to know that? L'shofar shal Rosh Hashanah, to know what you're supposed to blow on Rosh Hashanah. So nowadays, if they offer you a shipura for, Rav Chista is telling you, nowadays, if they offer you a shipura for Rosh Hashanah, then that's not what you need. You need a chatetzarta, because that's what used to be called a shofar. That's what used to be called a shofar, and therefore that's what you need in order to, that's what you need in order to be Yosef Mitzvah. And number three, pasurta. What used to be called pasurta, meaning a small table, is now called pasurta, which means a large table. And pasurta, and vice versa, what used to be called a large table is now called a small table. L'may nafkamina, why do we need to know that? For l'mekka chamemka, as far as buying and selling. If you want to buy a large table, and somebody offers you a pasurta, then you should know, you're getting the wrong thing. He's offering you the wrong thing, that's, he's going to give you a small table. You want a large table, you need to ask for pasurta. So why were the names of these three things dafka changed after the Churban? All of it actually has to do with the Churban. There's someplace else where it also gives this list. The Gemara also gives this list in Masechet Shabbos, and Marsha explains over there that. All these three things have to do with the Churban. The Arava and the Tzatzafa, we said before, the Jewish people were supposed to be like an Arava, and instead they became like a Tzatzafa. The Chatzetzauta Shippura is, they used to blow Shofar and Chatzotris in the Bismikdash on Rosh Hashanah and on Tainus Tibur, so therefore those names were also changed in connection with the Churban. And pasurta, there used to be the shulchan from which, through the fact that there was lechem aponim on the shulchan, from that there was parnasa for the whole world. So now that got changed after the churban for the worse, because now we don't have parnasa in such a generous way as we did before, because we lack that bracha represented by the shulchan. Amar Abaya, so Abaya says there's actually a fourth one. Atani Omer, there's another one that we can add where the names have been switched around. Beikasi huvlila huvlila beikasi. What used to be called beikasi is now called huvlila, and vice versa. Beikasi and huvlila are two of an animal's four stomachs. A kosher animal we know has four stomachs, and the way it works is when the animal eats grass or whatever it eats, it starts out getting digested and getting broken down in the first stomach, which is called the keres in English, it's called the rumen. After that, eventually, it goes down into the second stomach, which is called, in halacha, the beis hakosis, in Aramaic equivalent is beis kasi. There, it gets formed into cud, and then the animal regurgitates it and chews it again. Eventually, it goes from the beis kasi into the third stomach, which is called, in Hebrew, hemsis. And there it gets further broken down, and water gets extracted from it. And eventually, it goes to the fourth stomach, which is called the cava. In English it's called the abomasum, and there it gets actually chemically broken down, and then the nutrients of it are absorbed into the animal's bloodstream. Anyway, the point is, so the names of the second and third stomachs, Abaya says, have been switched around since the Churban. The nafkamina of that would be as far as the din of a needle that you find in the thickness of the beis hakosis. Now, the beis hakosis is called that because actually the lining of it resembles kosis, resembles cups. So the point is, it has kind of a double lining. So if you find a needle that goes through one layer of the beis hakosis, then fine, the animal is still kosher because you don't have a hole going all the way through it. So like none of the semi-digested food is able to leak out into the body cavity, which would make the animal treif if it did. Or just the fact that there's a hole would make it treif already. So on the other hand, what used to be called the huvlila, the third stomach, the hemsis, that one has a very thin wall. That one doesn't have a double wall. So therefore you find the needle in it, even only in one side, then the animal is going to be safe because inevitably that needle will have punctured through the whole thing. So therefore, so now you need to know, says Abaya, that that din, the din is still correct, but now you have to switch around the name of the, now you have to switch around the names of the stomachs involved, because it used to be that that would apply to the Bay Cassie, that if you find the needle only sticking through one side, it's kosher, and now you need to know that that concept applies instead to the Huvlila, and vice versa. Tosfos discusses over here that, Tosfos discusses that a little more, what exactly are the dinim of it. You also have that there's also a double wall between the Beis HaKosis and the Hemsis. There's a passageway between them for the food to pass through. There's also a double wall between them. So Tosfos discusses further what happens if that double wall itself has a hole in it, and how much the puncture can be through, and it'll still be kosher, and at what point it becomes possible. Omer Rava Bar Yosef. Rava Bar Yosef says he was a fifth one. Afani Omer. He was a fifth one where the names have been switched around. Bavel Bursif, Bursif Bavel. What used to be called Bavel is now called Bursif, and what used to be called Bursif is now called Bavel. L'may Nafkamina, what do we need to know that for? L'gitei Noshim, we need to know that as far as Dinim of Git. So Rashi explains this is relevant as far as the question like this. The first Mishnah of Masechet Gittin tells us that if a person brings a get from Chutz La'aretz, then we have a problem over there. The Gemara explains over there, first of all, the Batei Dinim and Chutz La'aretz are not necessarily so expert in Halacha. And number two, you don't always have Edim, you don't always have people who are able to come and certify that these are in fact genuine signatures of the Edim. Therefore, the Shliach who brings the get has to be able to declare Refanei Nichtam, Refanei Nechtam, this get was written and signed in my presence. And then the Gemara explains over there how that works, that he together with the Edim signed on it, in effect constitutes a base din, and therefore it's kosher, etc. Anyway, on the other hand, though, now the Gemara tells us over there that Bavel is like, now, on the other hand, in Eretz Yisrael, you don't need to do that, because the Gemara explains over there, the Bnei Eretz Yisrael know Halacha, so they know to write, they know the various Halachas of writing Gittin, and also there's people always traveling back and forth all around Eretz Yisrael, so therefore it's easy enough to find people to certify the signatures of the Edim, therefore you don't need to say B'fana Nechta, B'fana Nechtam. So now, if a person comes, now the Gemara also tells us that their Bavel is like Eretz Yisrael in that regard, because in Bavel, they were Talmid Chachamim, and there were also people traveling around from one place to another. So therefore, you don't need to say B'fana Nechta, B'fana Nechtam when you bring the get in Bavel itself, or between Bavel and Eretz Yisrael. So now, you need to know, says Rav Bar Yosef, that what used to be called Bavel is now called Bursif, and vice versa. So therefore, be careful. If you bring a get from what's now called Bavel, you need to be able to say, Bufana Nechtem, Bufana Nechtem, just like if you bring it from any place else in Chutz La'aretz, because the people of Bursif are not Bnei Torah. In fact, Rashi brings from a Gemara in Sanhedrin that says that they were actually Amir Oretz. On the other hand, what used to be called Bavel is now called Bursif. So if you're bringing a get from what's now called Bursif, then you don't need to say B'fanin Nechta, B'fanin Nechta. Tosfos points out another point as well, might be as far as what place you write in the get. You need to write in the name of the get. You need to write in the get the name of the city where it was given. So therefore, you need to know whether to write Bavel or Bursif. Tosfos says, though, no, because Bavel, Lechora over here, we're talking about the country of Bavel. We're not talking about the city of Bavel. The city of Bavel was destroyed a couple of decades after Nebuchadnezzar's time. There's many Nevoris about it, about how it's going to be destroyed forever and never rebuilt. And therefore, nobody's living over there in order to be writing Git. And you don't write the name of a country. When you even nowadays, you write a Git in New York, for example. You don't write New York in the United States of America. You just write New York and you write the names of the waterways that it's on. So therefore, so it has to be that we're talking about over here as far as the dinim of B'fanin Nechta, B'fanin Nechta. Okay. So those are a bunch of things whose names have been changed. The point is, one of them is Arava and Chalfasa or Chalafta, whatever. And therefore, you need to be careful to take what's now called Chalafta for your dalad minim. Okay. Now that we've gone through three of the four minim, we're going to go through the esrog at the bottom of the amud, but now we have the three minim that need to be bound together. So let's talk about how many you bind together. Okay, we said the other day, you don't have to bind them together, but it's still mitzvah and amucha too. So, Rabbi Shmuel, v'shloisha hadasim u'shtei arabas. Rabbi Shmuel says that you're supposed to have three hadasim and two arabas. Lulav echad v'esrog echad. One lulav and one esrog. And as far as the hadasim, they are kosher. Afilu shnayim ktumim ve'echad enei kotum. Even if two of the hadassim are kotum, even if the tufts of two of them are cut off and one is not. The Gemara is going to ask, one second, if you need three hadassim, and we said before that a hadass whose top is chopped off is possible, how all of a sudden are we able to say that if two of them are chopped off, it's kosher? So we'll deal with that in the Gemara. Reb Taufin Omer, after the Shloshtim Ketumim, Reb Taufin says, even if all three of them are chopped off, the hadassim, then they're kosher. There's a couple of reasons why that might be. Rashi says that Reb Taufin maybe doesn't require the hadassim to be hodder at all. This that we've been saying throughout the parish, that you have to have the Dalad meaning, have to be hodder. So we said that the fact is it only says the word hodder by the Esrog, creates hodder. The Chachamim, we said, learned by a Hekish, that it applies to the other minim as well, because the other minim are listed right after that in the Pasuk. Reb Taufin might be taking the view that Reb Taufin might be taking the view, like Reb Yehuda, that we said the other day, that only the Esrog needs to be hodder, nothing else. So he might hold like Rabbi Yehuda in that, that only the Esrog needs to be Hodder. Actually, according to Rabbi Yehuda, even the Esrog doesn't need to be Hodder. He used the word Hodder for a different Drasha. We ended up saying on Lamed Aleph on the day. So Rabbi Taufin might hold that way. Another possibility is maybe that Rabbi Taufin holds that Hodder only applies to the Esrog and to the Lulav, which is mentioned right after that. Not the other Minim, which are only mentioned later in the Pasuk. And then the Rosh brings another Svara. The reason why the Hadas more than the other Minim should be kosher if the top is chopped off is because the top of the Hadas, anyway, the top of the stem of the Hadas is covered with leaves. You buy a Hadas every year, you notice you have a bunch of leaves clustered together at the top. So therefore, if the top of it is chopped off, it's not really so noticeable, and therefore it doesn't take away from the Hodder. So therefore, the Tarifin will be fine even if all three of them are chopped off. Okay. Now, we said that Rabbi Shmuel says you need three hadassim and two arabas. On the other hand, Rabbi Akiva, I mean, no, Kishem shall lulav esrog the echad, just like you only have one lulav and one esrog, as we're going to see in the Gemara how we know that. Hadas echad, the arava echad, that's the same way you have only one hadas and one arava, not three and two. It's interesting, usually the halacha is like Rabbi Akiva against an individual tana. Usually you say halacha could Rabbi Akiva, but habei roi, but here the halacha is in fact like Rabbi Shmuel, that we need three hadassim and two arabas. You are also allowed, you're not allowed to add to these minim, we talked about the other day, but you are allowed to add to the hadassim. You are allowed to have more than three hadassim, and many people, in fact, do have the minim to have more than three hadassim. In the later years, the Rebbe started pushing the idea that you should have six hadassim, and the Rebbe himself in his lulav had 36, and there are some people who have the minim to have even more. So the Gemara says, Tanya, Rabbi Shmuel, remember, the Pasuk says, pre-eats hodder. The Pasuk says, a fruit of a beautiful tree. So fruit is Loshen Yachid, implying Echad, implying that you should only have one, that you should only have one Esrog. Kapos Tmarim, now the word Kapos itself is plural, but as we said the other day, it's written without the Bav, so therefore we can read it as if it's a Kapas, so therefore Echad, it also means only one palm branch. Anaf eitz avos. So when it says anaf eitz avos, there are three words over there. So anaf means one, eitz is one, avos is one. Therefore shloisha. Therefore the pasuk is implying by that that you need three. That you need three hadassim. Tosfos actually wonders. I mean, first of all, we used some of those words to the other day to darshan about the characteristics of what a hadass is, and also why don't we say pre-eitz hodder is also three. So Tosfos says, okay, as far as pre-eitz hodder, we're going to dash in later on what the word pre-eitz means. It means that it has to be a tree where the fruit of it tastes similar to the wood of it, namely an esrog. So therefore, we don't have it available to teach us the number, but how it is that we learn from anaf eitz of us that it should be three, that Tosfos leaves as a question. And arve nochal, the word arve is plural, so therefore mir rabim shnayim, a plural represents two. So therefore, it means two. So therefore you need two. V'afilu shnayim ktumim v'echad enei kotum. And again, we said the hadassim are kosher, even if two of them are chopped off, or the top of them is chopped off, and one not. Reb Taufin emes shloisha v'afilu shloshtim ktumim. Reb Taufin says, I agree with you, Rabbi Shmuel, that you need three hadassim, but I say that the third hadass would be kosher, even if the top of it is chopped off. And we said in the Mishnah, Reb Akiva emes k'shem shalul v'esrog v'echad echad, v'esrog echad, the same thing, the hadas and the arava, you need one of each. So the Gemara continues, Amar lo Rabbi Eliezer, in the Braisa, Rabbi Eliezer continues and says to Rabbi Akiva, Yochu yehe esrog yimon ba'aguda achas, you would think that the esrog should be bundled together with them. How do you know that the three of them are bundled together and the esrog is separate? So Amarta, so you have to say, no, chinema pre-e-todr v'kapes tmarim. After all, the Pasuk can say an esrog and kapes tmarim, the lulav, which then would imply that you bind all of them together. Because kapos without the vav, therefore it means you don't combine the esrog as part of the bundle, you keep it separate. Next, continue the braisa, uminayin shema akhtin zesleh. How do we know that the David minim are ma'akiv one another? Meaning that you have to have all four of them, and if any of them are missing, then you don't have a mitzvah to take three. Talmud Lomar, lakach tem, therefore the pasuk says you should take, and the lakach tem, we darshan, should tehe lakicha tama. It has to be a complete taking. Now, from that, we learned also this that we said before, that if the Dalad Minim are missing something, for example, we talked about a point that somebody showed him that if the top of the Lulav or the other Minim is chopped off, then you have a lack of the Lakachtem, and therefore it's possible. We're going to learn in the next Mishnah that if an Esrog is missing any of its substance, it's possible because of that. So here we're also saying that it also teaches us that the Minim themselves, you have to take all four of them together. Again, as we talked about the other day, Tosfos discusses the question, does that mean that your yotze, just if you pick them up one after the other, or does it mean you have to have all four of them? Does it mean you have to have all four of them in your possession? And then it doesn't matter if you pick them up one at a time, or would it be, or is it that we're saying that it's kosher if you pick them up. If you pick them up all together, but they just don't have to be bound together. The Tosfos discusses the pros and cons of that. Okay. So now, going back to the Gemara, the Mishnah had said that Rabbi Shmuel allows you to use Hadassim where two of the three have their tops chopped off. So the Gemara asked Rabbi Shmuel, Manashah, what according to Rabbi Shmuel? Rabbi Shmuel seems to be inconsistent. Either way you look at it. If Rabbi Shmuel holds that the Hadassim have to be harder and they have to be complete, then liboy kulu. Then he should require that all of them have to be complete, not just one. The eloy boy shlemin. If he doesn't care about them being whole, afilo echanami boy. Then even one of them shouldn't be required. Why did he say that two of them have to be complete and one of them not? So the answer, or the other way around, two of them can be incomplete and one of them has to be complete. So the answer is Omer Bira, Omer Rav Ami. So the Bira says in the name of Rav Ami, Chazer by Rabbi Shmuel. You should know Rabbi Shmuel changed his mind. First he held that you need three of them, but then he came to agree with Rabbi Akiva that you only need one. So therefore, only that one has to be harder. So he agrees that you can have that two more are needed, but those are not essential to the mitzvah, therefore those can be chopped off. Okay, who is the halacha like? The Gemara says, Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Shmuel, halacha k'Rav Tarfon. The halacha is like Rav Tarfon, it's fine if all three of them are chopped off. And the Gemara says, V'az the Shmuel l'tameh, Shmuel is going according to his own svara, where we see that Shmuel holds that hadassim are kosher, even if the top of them are chopped off. As we see that Shmuel said to people who are selling Hadassim, he tells them, Ashbuz binaihu, and Ashbuz abinu, he tells them, charge fair prices. Don't think because you have a captive market over here, because everybody needs Hadassim, therefore you can charge whatever you want for them. Make sure you sell them at a normal price. The Eloi, and if you don't, Darishin al-Hu, K'Rav Tarfon, then I am going to publicly darshan that the halacha is like K'Rav Tarfon, that even chopped off Hadassim are kosher, and therefore then people don't need you, because Hadassim with chopped off tops are relatively easy to get. Because you can have, for example, a long hadas branch, and you cut it in two or three or whatever, and there you have hadas. And again, remember we learned the other day that the hadas technically only has to be three tefachim in length. So if you don't charge fair prices, then I'm going to announce the halacha as like a tarifin, and therefore people will be able to use chopped off ones. So they want to ask my timer. Why is he threatening them with Reb Tarfon's shita? He blames them from the makel. Is it because Reb Tarfon is makel and says that you can use chopped off ones? Religious shalukah Reb Akiva, the makel tray. Instead, why does he need Reb Tarfon's opinion that says that you need three, they can just be chopped off. Instead, he could douse in like Rabbi Akiva, who is even more makel, because after all, Rabbi Akiva only requires one. Rabbi Akiva only requires one hadas. Then the answer is tlosik tumi shrichi. The answer is it's very easy, relatively speaking, to find three hadassim with chopped off tops. Echad loikotum loishchiach. It's much harder to find one that's not cut off. So therefore, he threatens them doubtful with the parfen shita because that's the one that's going to have the most impact on them. If he tells them the halacha is like Rabbi Akiva, you need one. The fact is that one still needs to have a complete top. Then it still means they're going to still figure they can get away with charging higher prices because they have a captive market. Now, most of the Rishonim learn this kotum that we've been talking about, that it's talking about whether the top is chopped off or not. There is the Ravid on the Rambam very forcefully argues that. The Ravid actually says a very interesting expression against the Rambam over there. He says, Ruach HaKodesh, a fear of the base midrash, and we came upon him, that Ruach HaKodesh appeared many years ago in our base midrash, and we understand this kotum differently. Kotum does not mean the top chopped off. The fact is, we had previous Mishnayos that said that Niktam Roshay, that if the top is chopped off, then it's possible, not the Stam Mishnah. How all of a sudden can we be saying over here the halacha is like a typhon? Rather, the Ravid learns like this. You have hadassim grow, like most plants, they branch out. You start out with one branch of hadass, and then it branches out into smaller ones and so forth. Usually, what you would do is, when you're taking the hadass, you would usually chop off those side branches. So now Rabbi Shmuel is telling us that it's kosher if two out of the three of those were chopped, two of the three hadassim are kosher if they have those side branches chopped off, and Rabbi Tarfon says even all three of them. But none of them are talking about the top being chopped off. Lemaisa, it says in Shulchan Aruch, you shouldn't take the hadda in deference to the Ravid's opinion. Don't be taking a hadass that has the top chopped off. If you don't have a choice, then you can, because then you can understand, like the Rambam and Rashi and the other Rishonim that we are talking about the top being chopped off. Okay. On to the Esrog now. The Mishnah says, Esrog agozel by the Yavish Pasul, a stolen dry Esrog is Pasul, like with all the other Dalim in him. If it came from an Asherah tree or from an Irani Dachas, then it's possible, because as we said, because then it has to be burned. Now here we're going to have with the Esrog, because the Esrog is a fruit, and therefore it's edible, therefore you have a lot of dinim that apply to it that do not apply to the other three, which are not edible. So, shall Orla possible, an Esrog of Orla is possible, because Orla is also to eat, and even also Ba'anah. Shall Truma Tnei apostle, also if it's from Truma which became Tome, it's possible, because then you're not allowed to eat it. Shall Truma Tahoda lo yuto, if it's from Truma Tahoda, so then Lachila you shouldn't take it, and we'll discuss in the Gemara tomorrow about the Shem two reasons why. The not al kosher, but the other, if you took it, then it's kosher. Shall Dmai, what if the Esrog was Dmai, so you bought it from an Ama Oretz and you don't know whether he took mice from it. Beth Shammai says that it's possible because you can't eat it. Bessil Machshir and Bessil says it's kosher because, as we're going to say in the Gemara, poor people, Bessil says that poor people are allowed to eat Dmai, so therefore it can be considered lochem, can be considered edible. Shall Maisa Sheni be Yerushalayim? What if the Esrog is of Maisa Sheni? So outside Yerushalayim, there's no question. You for sure can't use it because you can't eat it over there, unless you're probably dead. But in Yerushalayim itself, where you're allowed to eat it, so again, lo yitzo, l'chachila, he should not take it, again, for reasons that we're going to talk about in the Gemara, the same reasons that apply to Truma Tahoda are going to apply to Maisa Sheni as well. We're going to have two reasons in the Gemara. Not though kosher, but yeah, but if he took it in Yerushalayim, then it's kosher because the fact is it is edible over there, and therefore it can be called lochem. Continues the Mishnah. Also chazozis al ruboy. If chazozis developed on most of the esrog, chazozis actually describes means like small boils or small blisters. So if you have that covering most of the esrog, and we're going to see in the Gemara more details about that. We're going to see in the Gemara where we get what we do that we look even for little imperfections on the esrog. We'll get to that in the next couple of days. Bez Hashem. So if you have chazozis on most of the esrog, or nitla pitmasai, or if the pitum broke off or was taken off the top of the esrog, or nikla, if the esrog was peeled, or nistak, if it was cracked along the length of it, or nikav, or if there's a hole in the esrog, b'chaser kalshu, and any of the actual substance of the esrog is missing, possible, then in all those cases, the esrog is possible, because then it's chaser, and then you're lacking, either you're lacking in hoder, or you're lacking in l'kicha tamah, which we just said before, l'kach tam, that has to be l'kicha tamah. On the other hand, also chazazis al miyotai, on the other hand, if chazazis only covers a minority of the esrog, or nital uktai, or if the oiketz is removed, and we're going to see in the Gemara about, there was details about that, the oiketz can be removed, but you still have to have that there, you can't have a hole there where the oiketz, usually like this, the oiketz at the bottom of the esrog, you have it extends a little bit into the stem of it, extends into the esrog a little bit. And if it's removed, then you have a hole over there, then it would be possible. We're talking about if it was cut off flush with the esrog. So if that came off, nika v'loy chasek al shavu, or if the esrog had a hole but none of its substance was missing, for example, let's say you stuck a needle into the esrog, so nothing of the actual flesh of the esrog was removed, so all of those, then it's kosher. Again, we're going to see in the Gemara, certain of these have more details to them that the Mishnah is not specifying. Esrog akushi, what about an esrog from Kush, which is black, such an esrog is possible. That has to be the normal color of an esrog. V'hayorek kikauti, what if it's green like a leek? So we talked about the other day, what Tosfa says, that yorek might mean several different colors. Yorek in and of itself might mean green or yellow or blue. But kikauti, Tosfa discussed over there whether a kikauti is more green or whether it's more blue. Whatever the case, the esrog is that color. Rameyur machshir, but Rabbi Yehuda poysel. Rameyur says it's kosher, Rabbi Yehuda says it's possible. And we talked about the other day because when we were discussing whether Rabbi Yehuda requires the esrog to be harder, first we thought that he requires it to be yellow because otherwise it's not harder. In the end, we say that no, because Rabbi Yehuda said it has to be a ripe fruit, and here where it's green, then it's still unripe. Okay. Sheer esrog akotin, what's the minimum size of an esrog? Rameyur oimer ke'egez. Rameyur says the minimum is the size of a walnut. Rabbi Yehuda oimer ke'beitzer. Rabbi Yehuda says it has to be at minimum the size of an egg. Uva gadol, what's the maximum size esrog you can take? Kadeshi yechas shnayim biyade. Divrei Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda says the minimum is that it has to be that you can hold two of that size in your hand. And we discussed the other day in the Gemara, the reason for that is, not because Rabbi Yehuda requires hodder, because in the end, we said he doesn't, but even for the esrog, but because he says, since you have to take the esrog in your left hand and the other minim in your right, you might take them in the wrong hands by mistake and then have to switch them around, and then you might drop the esrog. So because of that, you shouldn't use too large esrog. Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yossi says that no, you can even use an esrog. You can even use an esrog that's so large that you need to hold the one esrog in both hands, and that would still be fine. So we'll throw it out to Gemara. The Gemara says, Tanan Abanan, pre-eats hodder, when the Pasuk says, a fruit of a beautiful tree, that means eats, shetam, eats, a period shava. The fact that it says pre-eats means a fruit of a tree, meaning that the fruit and the wood of the tree have the same taste. Heavy om is the esrog. So you have to say that that's the esrog which has that characteristic. Now, when we say the fruit, the pashtus over here, we're talking about here and in other contexts, when you talk about the fruit of the esrog, what we really mean is the pith of the esrog. Like this, an esrog has a very thick rind, as we know. So we're talking about the rind of the esrog. When you cut open the esrog, you have that white rind, and then in the middle you have a little bit of pulp. We're talking about that rind has a similar taste to the wood of the esrog tree. So the Gemara is asked the aim of pilpulin. How do you know that it refers to the esrog? Maybe instead it refers to peppercorns, which also have that characteristic that the fruit of them, the peppercorn, tastes like the wood of the pepper tree. Kedetanya, as in fact we learn in the Braisa, hoyra meirem, mimash mashanemo nataftem kolates. Since the Pasuk says about the dinim of Orla, if you plant any tree, any adesh who eats Michael, obviously we're talking about the dinim of Orla, that you're allowed to eat from it. We have to be talking about a fruit tree. Matam alam eats Michael. So why does the Pasuk continue mentioning specifically a fruit tree? So it means eats shatam eats period shava. Means the Pasuk wants you to know that the Orla applies also to a tree where the wood tastes the same as the fruit. Heavy M is a pilgrim. necessarily, therefore, you have to say that we're referring to pilpulin, we're referring to peppercorns, which have that characteristic. That teaches you that peppercorns are chayav in erla. And you should know, by the way, from that you also learn that in Eretz Yisrael chaser klum, you can learn from that that Eretz Yisrael is lacking nothing, even though peppercorns are a tropical fruit. And but the point is, Rashi says, even though they're a low bush, you should realize that they're still considered a tree in halacha, and therefore they're chayiv in erla. Tosfos asks on that, you don't need that. Of course it's chayiv in erla. So what? You have lots of low trees that are chayiv in erla. Rather, Tosfos says, the point is, since you don't eat peppercorns fresh, you dry them, how do you know that even so, they're chayiv in erla, therefore you have the pasuk telling you that they are. And by the way, we learn from that, that in Eretz Yisrael chaser klum, you learn from that Eretz Yisrael is lacking nothing, even peppers, which are a tropical fruit. You would think those don't grow in Eretz Yisrael. Nevertheless, you should know Hashem made Eretz Yisrael in such a way it has microclimates in it where even peppers will successfully grow, even peppercorns will successfully grow in it, and therefore they're going to be chayv and orla, because on a daraisa level, at least orla applies only in Eretz Yisrael. Anyway, the point is that we see that peppers, that we see that peppercorns do have tam etze period shava. So how do you know when the pasuk is pre-eitz that it doesn't mean that you have to take peppercorns as one of the dalim minim? So the answer is the Gemara says hasim mishum b'lo efshir. The reason why we know that not is because it would be impossible to do it. Heichi nev, because how would you do it? Ninkoit chada, would you take one peppercorn? One peppercorn is very tiny. It's so small you wouldn't notice it. Ninket treyot klasa, should you take two or three? No, echad amar achmana. The pasuk says that you take one. The pasuk says you take one, which is pre, which we said before meant one singular one. Below shnayim or shloisha peiros. So not two or three peiros. So therefore, it's impossible. So yes, logically, it could have been peppercorns on the grounds of etzei period shabbat, but the fact that peppercorns are small knocks them out. Okay. The Gemara goes on with a few other drushes of what hodr means and how we see from the word hodr that it specifically refers to a sregim. Rebbe Omer al tikri hodr ela hadir. Don't read the word hodr, but rather read it as if it said hadir, the pen where you have animals. Therefore, madir is a yeshbek derlam uktanim tmimim ubalim mumim. Just like a pen of animals when you're doing mice of behemoth, for example. You have old animals, young animals. You have ones that have no mum. You have ones that have a mum. So, af hochinami, the same thing. There has to be a tree that has all of those. Yesh begerlam uktanim tmimim ubalim mumim. What do you mean? So, otur shar peres less begerlam uktanim tmimim ubalim mumim. What do you mean? All other fruits have the same thing also. You have big fruits and small fruits and tmimim and balim mumim. What's special about a sroigim in that? The answer is, ela hochikama, ad shaboyim ktanim adayim gderlam kayamim. When the new baby fruit starts growing on the tree, then the old one is still there. Because like we talked about the other day, and as we're going to say now in the Gemara, unlike most fruits, where you have the old ones eventually ripen and get overripe and fall off the tree, esroigim don't do that. They continue to grow on the tree. So on the same tree, you have many different generations of esroigim growing on the same tree. And therefore, in that sense, it's like a pen full of animals that are all together there in one pen. In fact, there's an explanation that therefore, so the Esrog represents, we know that all the Dalet Minim represent different kinds of Jews, and they represent the Achdus of the Jewish people. So when it comes to the Esrog, it all grows on the tree continuously. So therefore, it represents the Achdus between the different ages and the different groups of the Jewish people. Okay, a couple of other drushes. Rabbi Bohu Omer al tikri hodor ela hador. Don't read hodor, beautiful, but hador, meaning dovish, hador be'ilonim, mishana l'shana. The word hodor means a fruit that lives on the tree from year to year. Same idea. It continues growing on the tree and it doesn't fall off from year to year. Ben Azay Omer al tikri hodor ela hidur. Ben Azay says another one, don't read hodor, but rather hidur, shaken beloshin yibani, kurin lamayim hidur. The Greek word for water is hidur. It's related to the word hydro, like you have all the different words in English that begin with hydro, all come from that same Greek root. The Greek root word for water is hydor or hydor or whatever. So therefore, so it's the Greek word. And sometimes the Gemara will do that, of course. We dash in words in Lashon Kodesh based on Greek or based on other languages. Therefore, the Ezer, he should go to Lakomayim. So therefore, it refers to a tree that grows on a lot of water. Rainwater is not enough for it. You have to irrigate it. And which one is that? Heviam is the Esrog. Therefore, you must say that that's an Esrog. So that's another way that we know from the Pasuk that the Esrog is the fruit that it's referring to. And that's what you need to take as part of your Dalet Minim. Okay. Fair enough, everyone.